Chapter 44. Trophies in the House of the Conqueror. I am not acquainted with the process which is in use, but believe that fumigation is the principal agency employed. All the remains which I saw presented the appearance of a ham after being suspended for some time in a smoky chimney. But to return from the dead to the living, the late festival had drawn together, as I had every reason to believe, the whole population of the Vale, and consequently I was enabled to make some estimate with regard to its numbers. I should imagine that there were about 2,000 inhabitants in Taipei, and no number could have been better adapted to the extent of the valley. The valley is some 9 miles in length, and may average one in breadth, the houses being distributed at wide intervals throughout its whole extent, principally, however, towards the head of the Vale. There are no villages. The houses stand here and there in the shadow of the groves, or are scattered along the banks of the winding stream, their golden-hued bamboo sides and gleaming white thatch forming a beautiful contrast to the perpetual verdure in which they are embowered. There are no roads of any kind in the valley. Nothing but a labyrinth of footpaths twisting and turning among the thickets without end. The penalty of the fall presses very lightly upon the valley of Taipei, for, with the one solitary exception of striking a light, I scarcely saw any piece of work performed there which caused the sweat to stand upon a single brow. As for digging and delving for a livelihood, the thing is altogether unknown. Nature has planted the breadfruit and the banana, and in her own good time she brings them to maturity, when the idle savage stretches forth his hand, and satisfies his appetite. Ill-fated people! I shudder when I think of the change a few years will produce in their paradisaical abode, and probably when the most destructive vices, and the worst attendances on civilization, shall have driven all peace and happiness from the valley, the magnanimous French will proclaim to the world that the Marquesas Islands have been converted to Christianity. And this the Catholic world will doubtless consider as a glorious event. Heaven help the Isles of the Sea! The sympathy which Christendom feels for them has, alas, in too many instances proved their bane. How little do some of these poor islanders comprehend, when they look around them, that no inconsiderable part of their disasters originate in certain tea party excitements, under the influence of which benevolent-looking gentlemen in white cravats solicit alms, and old ladies in spectacles, and young ladies in sober russet gowns, contribute sixpences towards the creation of a fund, the object of which is to ameliorate the spiritual condition of the Polynesians, but whose end has almost invariably been to accomplish their temporal destruction. Let the savages be civilized, but civilize them with benefits, and not with evils, and let heathenism be destroyed, but not by destroying the heathen. The Anglo-Saxon hive have extirpated paganism from the greater part of the North American continent, but with it, they have likewise extirpated the greater portion of the red race. Civilization is gradually sweeping from the earth the lingering vestiges of paganism, and at the same time the shrinking forms of its unhappy worshippers. Among the islands of Polynesia, no sooner are the images overturned, the temples demolished, and the idolaters converted into nominal Christians, that disease, vice, and premature death make their appearance. The depopulated land is then recruited from the rapacious hordes of enlightened individuals who settle themselves within its borders, and clamorously announce the progress of the truth. Neat villas, trim gardens, shaven lawns, spires, and cupolas arise, while the poor savage soon finds himself an interloper in the country of his fathers, and that too on the very site of the hut where he was born. The spontaneous fruits of the earth, which God in his wisdom had ordained for the support of the indolent natives, remorselessly seized upon and appropriated by the stranger, are devoured before the eyes of the starving inhabitants, or sent on board the numerous vessels which now touch at their shores. When the famished wretches are cut off in this manner from their natural supplies, they are told by their benefactors to work, and earn their support by the sweat of their brows. But to no fine gentleman born to hereditary opulence, does this manual labor come more unkindly than to the luxurious Indian, when thus robbed of the bounty of heaven. Habituated to a life of indolence, he cannot and will not exert himself, and want, disease, and vice, all evils of foreign growth, soon terminate his miserable existence. But what matters all this? Behold the glorious result. The abominations of paganism have given way to the pure rites of the Christian worship. The ignorant savage has been supplanted by the refined European. Look at Honolulu, the metropolis of the Sandwich Islands. A community of disinterested merchants, and devoted self-exiled heralds of the cross, located on the very spot that 20 years ago was defiled by the presence of idolatry. What a subject for an eloquent Bible meeting orator! Nor has such an opportunity for a display of missionary rhetoric been allowed to pass by unimproved. But when these philanthropists send us such glowing accounts of one half of their labors, why does their modesty restrain them from publishing the other half of the good they have wrought? Not until I visited Honolulu was I aware of the fact that the small remnant of the natives had been civilized into draft horses and evangelized into beasts of burden. But so it is. They have been literally broken into the traces and are harnessed to the vehicles of their spiritual instructors like so many dumb brutes. Lest the slightest misconception should arise from anything thrown out in this chapter, or indeed in any other part of the volume, let me here observe that against the cause of missions in the abstract no Christian can possibly be opposed. It is in truth a just and holy cause. But if the great end proposed by it be spiritual, the agency employed to accomplish that end is purely earthly. And, although the object in view be the achievement of much good, that agency may nevertheless be productive of evil. In short, missionary undertaking, however it may blessed of heaven, is in itself but human, and subject, like everything else, to errors and abuses. And have not errors and abuses crept into the most sacred places, and may there not be unworthy or incapable missionaries abroad, as well as ecclesiastics of similar character at home? May not the unworthiness or incapacity of those who assume apostolic functions upon the remote islands of the sea more easily escape detection by the world at large, than if it were displayed in the heart of a city? An unwarranted confidence in the sanctity of its apostles, a proneness to regard them as incapable of guile, and an impatience of the least suspicion to their rectitude as men or Christians, have ever been prevailing faults in the church. Nor is this to be wondered at. For subject as Christianity is to the assaults of unprincipled foes, we are naturally disposed to regard everything like an exposure of ecclesiastical misconduct as the offspring of malevolence or irreligious feeling. Not even this last consideration, however, shall deter me from the honest expression of my sentiments. There is something apparently wrong in the practical operations of the Sandwich Islands mission. Those who from pure religious motives contribute to the support of this enterprise should take care to ascertain that their donations, flowing through many devious channels, at last effect their legitimate object, the conversion of the Hawaiians. I urge this, not because I doubt the moral probity of those who disperse the funds, but because I know that they are not rightly applied. To read pathetic accounts of missionary hardships, and glowing descriptions of conversion, and baptisms, taking place beneath palm trees, is one thing, and to go to the Sandwich Islands, and see the missionaries dwelling in picturesque, and prettily furnished coral rock villas, whilst the miserable natives are committing all sorts of immorality around them, is quite another. In justice to the missionaries, however, I will willingly admit that wherever evils may have resulted from their collective mismanagement of the business of the mission, and from the want of vital piety evinced by some of their number, still the present deplorable condition of the Sandwich Islands is by no means wholly chargeable against them. The demoralizing influence of a dissolute foreign population, and the frequent visits of all descriptions of vessels, have tended not a little to increase the evils alluded to. In a word, here, as in every case, where civilization has in any way been introduced among those whom we call savages, she has scattered her vices, and withheld her blessings. As wise a man as Shakespeare has said, that the bearer of evil tidings hath but a losing office, and so I suppose, will it prove with me, in communicating to the trusting friends of the Haiyan mission, what has been disclosed in various portions of this narrative. I am persuaded, however, that as these disclosures will by their very nature attract attention, so they will lead to something which will not be without ultimate benefit to the cause of Christianity in the Sandwich Islands. I have but one more thing to add in connection with this subject. Those things which I have stated as facts will remain facts, in spite of whatever the bigoted or incredulous may say or write against them. My reflections, however, on those facts may not be free from error. If such be the case, I claim no further indulgence than should be conceded to every man whose object is to do good. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.